Coca-Cola brings you Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy. Sunday night, and time again for Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy. With Mortimer Sturd and Ray Noble and his orchestra, brought to you each week by the Coca-Cola Company. Tonight's special guest is the motion picture and radio star, Dick Powell. And now, Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy.
Well, Charlie, here we are.
Oh, gee, Bergen, how do you think up those clever opening lines?
I guess it's just a knack.
It must be.
Yeah.
Well, now, what's that big book that you've been studying there? Is it your homework, perchance? Don't be persilly.
No.
This is my book of telephone numbers, Bergie.
Telephone numbers?
Yeah. I want to see what girl's turn it is to live tonight.
Oh, I see. Charlie, I might have known that. All you care about is girls.
No, I'm beginning to appreciate older women, too.
Oh, you are?
Yes, I've got some here that are nearly 17.
Is that so?
Yes.
Young man, you should throw that book away.
What, after all the work I've done on it?
No.
Look here, just look at it, Bergie. I've got them all classified according to their hair.
Oh.
Now, there's a natural blonde and unnatural blondes, and premature blondes.
I see.
Then over here I have Titians and imitations.
Imitations. Well, how can you waste your time that way?
Yeah.
You know, I attend strictly to business, never give a thought to girls.
Now,
you should be ashamed.
You should be embalmed.
Oh, no. Charlie, I can see now that it's time that I had another serious talk with you.
Why? Have the birds and bees made some new discovery?
No.
Oh, you take it so heavy.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about your future. That's why I've asked a vocational guidance director to come here today.
Uh-oh.
You can talk over what you would like to do and make of yourself in the future. Talk about the work that you'd like to do.
Well, that's going to be a mighty short discussion.
Yeah. I don't see why. There are many fine professions. Why, you could be a surgeon. You might even write a textbook on surgery.
Yeah, that's nice. I could call it Inside People.
Perhaps you'd rather be a dentist.
It's such a grind.
I know. Or you could be an architect. You could design public buildings.
That ain't bad. I could draw plans for a school with no entrances.
All right. You might even be a lawyer. Yes, you might even be a judge.
Now you're talking, Bergie.
You'd like to be a judge.
I would. Really?
Yes.
A judge of bathing beauty contest.
There you are, right back to girls.
Oh, I'm lucky.
Yes. Charlie, what sort of a job would you prefer, really?
Well, I wouldn't mind being a horse trainer on a merry-go-round.
Oh, now, please. No, no.
No, I think I could capture dinosaurs for a living.
Dinosaurs?
Yes.
There are no dinosaurs alive today.
No?
No.
Well, I'll wait until they make a comeback.
No, no.
Hey, get a load of that character that's coming in over here.
Hello. I am Thomas T. Thomas, the Friendly Credit Vocational Director.
Welcome.
The right man for the right job, by George. That's our motto. Well, Mr.
You sent for me?
Yes, I did. Yes, Mr. Thomas, yes. And here's the young man for whom I want you to find the proper career.
Well. So this is the little square peg.
I resent that.
Yeah.
This is a hate at first sight case.
Yeah. Do you think you can help him, Mr. Thomas?
Oh, yes, Mr. Bergen. Of course I can. Lots of people don't know what they're fitted for, and it's my business to give them fits.
To give them fits.
Jim Fitz.
Yeah.
You'll have to excuse me. Sometimes my sense of humor gets away from me.
Well, you can hardly blame it.
No. Charlie must choose a profession. I suggested that he might be a lawyer or a surgeon, but he wouldn't listen.
No, no, you see, he was absolutely Jim Dandy right.
Oh, I know.
People are often talked into the wrong profession. Do you know what my father wanted me to be?
Somebody else's son.
Jim Fitz. Milton Berle must envy me tonight.
Bergen, this happy hyena is not going to help me any.
Oh, yeah.
No, no, wait a minute. I haven't given up yet. No, indeedy. Let's test your mental responses.
Yeah.
Now, here's what we're going to do. Very interesting. I'll say a word, and you tell me the word it makes you think of.
Shoot.
Bam. Giving it
yes, yes, of course, of course. Mr. Thomas, are you sure that you're competent at this word?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Certainly. I've helped hundreds of people in the race to success.
Oh, fine.
Yesterday, I started a girl in the race by advising her to be a stenographer.
Uh-huh.
And today, she's on her first lap.
Gee, oh, yeah.
On her first lap. Oh, I chalked up another one.
Yeah. I am afraid you're not very helpful, Mr. Thomas.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I may as well leave.
Yeah.
With this kid, I've run into a log jam.
Yeah.
Run into a log
yeah,
jam.
Yeah, we heard it. Yeah, yes,
oh, Thomas, you're really a tease tonight.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Charlie. I guess you'll have to choose your own profession.
Well, I've already decided. I want to be one of those detectives.
A detective?
A private eye.
You want to be a private eye?
If it's good enough for Dick Powell, it's good enough for me.
Well, Charlie, Dick Powell isn't really a private detective.
No?
No. On the radio, he plays the part of Richard Diamond, private detective. But in his new picture, Mrs. Mike, he's a Northwest Mounted Policeman up in Canada, you see?
Well, that's still a private eye. On horseback.
Yes.
In bad weather.
No, no, no. You're determined to follow that career, are you?
That's for me, Bergen. That's for me. With those private eyes, dames are a dime a dozen. And they've always got a dollar's worth.
Yes. All right. Dick Powell is a friend of mine. I'll go and see him and ask him to give you a job as his assistant.
Oh, Bergen, you're a pal. You know all those things I said about you? You know that you were lazy, stingy, and stubborn, and cranky?
Yes, Charlie.
Pick out one of them, and I'll take it back.
All right.
Now here's Ray Noble and his version of detective music in the still of the night.
Minnesota moon keeps shining, shining on my home in Tennessee. Hello, Mr. Bergen.
Well, Mortimer, this is a surprise. You know, I'm on my way to see Dick Powell, and here I meet you.
Where?
Well, here.
Well, who?
You.
Why?
Never mind. Never mind. Just forget it. I just want you to know that I'm glad to see you.
Oh.
Now, where have you been keeping yourself?
The whole same old place. Inside my skin, I think. I make them up, you see.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen you all week. Were you out to Snurdville?
Yeah, I was back there.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I went back because I wanted to see the new bathhouse in Snurdville.
New bathhouse?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Well, so Snurdville has a new bathhouse.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Snurdville is growing up by leaps and frogs.
Leaps by leaps, yeah.
Tell me, are you a good swimmer?
Well, to tell the truth, I ain't no Johnny Weisenheimer.
No, I can't. Well, maybe you need some instruction sometime. I'll teach you the Australian crawl.
No, I'd never learn that. I can hardly swim in English.
Is that... Well, what about diving? Have you tried that?
Oh, what was the question?
What about diving?
Oh, yeah. I've dubbed a few divs.
Well, when you dive, what one do you perform the best? The single somersault?
No.
Double somersault?
No.
Half gainer? Full gainer? Swan? Jackknife?
Well, when you get to belly flopper, you can stop there.
I see. Well, did you find the swimming pool cold?
No, I didn't find it at all. When I went in there with my swimming suit on, there was a bunch of fellers there shooting big marbles on green tables.
And just a minute now. I'm afraid this is going to be true. Are you sure you went to the right place to swim?
Well, there was a sign outside that said pool room.
Pool room.
And I'm going to quit coming here if you don't stop snickering at me.
All right.
You just have it all the time.
All right. A pool room isn't a place to swim.
Well, I sort of figured there was something wrong.
Yes. When did you start getting suspicious?
Well, I'd say the third time I dove.
The third time you dove. What did you suspect was wrong?
Well, I didn't splash.
Oh, you didn't splash.
Let me explain. Pool is a popular pastime, similar to billiards, played upon oblong tables surrounded by elastic ledges or cushions against which ivory spheres are impelled with an elongated cue.
No!
Well, anyhow, it's lucky there weren't no water in the pool. I might have never got out alive.
Well, now, why do you say that?
Well, there was a sign on the wall which says, "Look out for pool sharks."
Pool sharks.
Why so dumb, you know?
No. Mortimer, where does all your stupidity come from?
Oh, I grow it myself.
You grow it yourself.
That way it's always fresh.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Speaking for your host of the airwaves, the Coca-Cola Company, let me remind you that today, tomorrow, every day, at service stations everywhere, the familiar red Coca-Cola cooler is your host of the highways. Just as with frosty bottles of Coke on its shelves, your own refrigerator becomes a host to all who enjoy your home. Well, Edgar kept his promise and talked to Dick Powell regarding Charlie's ambition to become a private eye. But the best laid plans sometimes go astray, and, well, here's Dick Powell to tell you about it himself.
Yeah, I'm Dick Powell. Just because I've played a private eye on the screen a few times, people think I'm that kind of fella in real life. Well, let me set you straight. I'm a plain guy, the same as everybody else. I've got a plain home in Beverly Hills, a plain swimming pool, and I drive a plain Cadillac. But I like to be agreeable. So when Edgar Bergen asked me to help him cure Charlie McCarthy of this detective business, I said, okay. I borrowed an office from a friend of mine, stuck a sign on the door that read Dick Powell, Private Investigator, and sat down to wait for Edgar and Charlie. They showed up bright and early that morning. Come in.
Well, here we are, Dickie Bird, all ready to start private eyeing. I got my blackjack and I'm just looking for a head to bounce it off.
Charlie, I can see that you have the wrong idea about the detective business.
Dick's right. It isn't nearly as exciting as you think it is.
It isn't?
No. It means long, tedious hours, hard, dull jobs, routine police work. And believe me, Charlie, a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Policeman's lot is not a happy one. Gilbert to Sullivan, Gilbert to Sullivan, come in. One chorus, that is all.
When a felon's not engaged in his employment,
his employment,
or maturing his felonious little plans,
little plans,
his capacity for innocent enjoyment,
and enjoyment,
is just as great as any honest man,
honest man.
Our feelings we with difficulty smother,
difficulty smother,
when constabulary duties to be done,
to be done,
ah, take one consideration with another.
With another.
A policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Oh.
When constabulary duties to be done, to be done,
a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Happy one.
Who cares about policemen? I want to be a private eye.
It's even worse for a private peeper, Charlie. Listen. We get slugged and slapped around on every caper.
Every caper.
We get shot and stabbed and tossed into the creek.
Splash, splash.
Our exploits are featured in the daily paper.
Daily paper.
But they're very, very tough on the physique.
The physique.
It may seem a vital way to earn your victuals. You may think mayhem and homicide are fun.
Ha, ha.
But you'll find while you're reclining in hospital,
in hospital,
that a peeper's lot is not a healthy one.
Oh.
When private eyeing duties to be done,
to be done,
a peeper's lot is not a healthy one.
Healthy one.
Well, Charlie, my boy, what do you say now?
They can torture me and hit me with a hammer. But still, I'll be a mighty lucky guy. All my clients will be gorgeous gals with glamour. And in private, I'll be giving them the eye.
You'll get gals who don't know how to hold their hubbies.
I will.
And gals whose devastating days are done.
So what?
You'll get homely ones and skinny ones and chubbies.
I like them all.
A peeper's lot is no romantic one.
Oh, when private eyeing duties to be done, to be done. A peeper's lot is no romantic.
I know what goes on with private eyes. Now, come on, when does the beautiful girl walk in here?
Charlie, it's only in the movies that the beautiful girl walks in and throws herself at the private eye.
Well, then what are we waiting for? Let's go to the movies.
No, Charlie, I agree with Dick. A detective's life isn't as glamorous as you think it is.
There's someone at the door. Come in.
He's pretty strong.
A beautiful girl walked in. She was tall and willowy with plenty of curves. And the clinging gown she wore really clanged. off as it clung. I didn't care. I wasn't in the mood for grammar. And then, as I noticed the ugly welt behind her ear, the bruise under her eye, and the scratches on her throat, some sixth sense told me she was in trouble. So I said to her, "Won't you sit down?"
"Thanks. I think I will."
There weren't any chairs around, so she sat on the floor. I could see Charlie was entranced by this glamorous creature, by the tone of his voice when he spoke.
"Hello, beautiful.
Why are you talking to me?"
"I wasn't looking at Bergen." "What's your trouble, sister?"
"I've been a naughty girl. I just killed my husband."
"Well, we all make mistakes."
"But I think I was drugged."
"Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Do you suspect anyone?"
"Yes. Does the eagle's eye mean anything to you?"
"No, but I imagine it means a lot to the eagle."
"It's a secret society. They're trying to blackmail me. They want $100,000.
"Why don't you go to the police?"
"Well, that's no good. They wouldn't give her a dime."
"I'm sorry, sister, but I can't handle your case."
"Would $5,000 change your mind?"
Even before the words were out of her mouth, I could feel my mind changing. I told the girl I'd take her case. She was so grateful she put her arms around my neck. This came as a surprise, because she was 10 feet away from me at the time. Then as she rested her head on my shoulder, I noticed for the first time that her ears were pierced, but not the earrings. You could have driven a truck through those holes. More than a minute after the girl left my office, there was a knock at the door.
"Whoever knocked forgot to take off his brass knuckles."
"Quick, Bergen, see who it is. Look, there in the hall."
"Why, it's a duck. And it's dead."
"A dead duck, huh? Looks like foul play." "Wait a minute, there's a note attached to its leg."
"A note? What does it say, Dick?"
"It says here, lay off this case, or it'll happen to you what happened to this duck. And that shouldn't happen to a dog." "Signed, the Eagle's Eye. What do you make of that note, fellas?"
"Well, I think the Eagle's Eye gang has a gag rider lurking for them."
"Boys, this duck has been stuffed by a taxidermist. We can trace it."
"Okay, let's get a taxi and go and see a dermist."
"Well, here's the taxidermist shop. Let's go in."
"Oh, it's a musty old place. I wonder where the taxidermist is."
"Hello, friends, and welcome up. Welcome, friends, to Ursel Twing's tidy taxidermy tavern."
"Mr. Twing, do you stuff birds?"
"Well, now you asked me a very, very nice question there." "As a matter of fact, I do. Heavens to Elizabeth, yes, I do. I stuff everything from an olive to a ballot box."
"You must be very good at your profession."
"Oh, you'll never know. As a matter of fact, I'm a regular Dr. Jekyll with the hide."
"Then tell us, Mr. Twing, did you stuff this duck?"
"Well, now let me see. I might have had a hand in it."
Where would you say this duck came from?"
"Well, offhand, I'd say from a duck egg."
"Are you sure that you're a taxidermist?"
"Well, I'm fairly certain of it. As a matter of fact, I once stuffed a grizzly, if you'll pardon the expression, bear skin."
"We are not interested in..."
"Do you see that tiger over there? Stuffing that beast was my greatest accomplishment."
"What's so wonderful about stuffing a tiger?"
"While it was still alive."
"Mr. Twing, would you make up your mind? Did you or did you not stuff this duck?"
"Well, now, just let me see a minute. No, gentlemen, that is not my stuffing. I always use breadcrumbs." "All right.
Come on, fellas, let's get out of here. We got work to do."
"Well, I've got work to do, too. I'm stuffing a giraffe, and I'm simply up to its neck. Goodbye, I..."
Well, we weren't solving the case, so I decided it might be a good idea to drop in on the girl. She was wearing one of those strapless evening gowns. And if she was trying to hide a guilty conscience, she certainly wasn't dressed for it. She seemed surprised to see us.
"Well, I'm surprised to see you.
There are a few questions we want to ask you, Miss... Oh, by the way, you didn't tell us your name.
It's Mary.
Ah, Mary, what a pretty name.
Mary Crummelgruber.
Ah, Mary, what a pretty name.
Why, stay there. I say, hello, I hope I'm not intruding.
Well, who are you? Okay, now start talking.
Oh, well, I'm this lady's next door neighbor, you see. I come in here often by mistake.
Somewhere. Did you ever see this duck before?
Oh, yes.
Interesting. Tell us more about your wife and the duck.
Well, she had a habit of going out in the backyard and scratching in the garden, you know.
The duck?
No, my wife. She had the hides. And in the evening, she had a habit of sitting in the easy chair by the fire and listening to the wireless.
Your wife?
No, the duck. No. Oh, you're just crazy about Laminadla.
Exactly. What did you do after the murder?
Oh, I just picked her up by the feathers.
Your wife or the duck?
Well, you know, I don't quite remember. You see, the lights went out about that time.
No, I...
Little by little, things were starting to make sense.